are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome to another Monday edition of Locked On NBA, the biggest stories with the local experts. I'm your Monday host, Jackson Gatlin, also host of Locked On Rockets right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, we'll be chatting with Nick Angstedt from Locked On and Mavs as Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks absolutely embarrass Devin Booker, Chris Paul, and the Phoenix Suns in Game 7 and advance to the Western Conference Finals to face the Golden State Warriors. Then, we chat with John Corrales from Locked On Celtics as there is a Boston three party in Game 7 in Boston as the Celtics and Jason Tatum advance past Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks, taking control of their Game 7 out east and advancing to face the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. And lastly, we chat with Kane Pittman of Locked On Bucks to figure out just exactly what went wrong in Game 7 for Giannis and company. Where can the Milwaukee Bucks improve? How curious is this loss in Game 7, and what are the ramifications going into the offseason for Coach Budenholzer, for Giannis, for Chris Middleton, for the roster construction as a whole? All of that and more coming up here very shortly. As always, appreciate you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. Now, today's episode is brought to you by Sakara. Sakara is a wellness company anchored in food as medicine on a mission to nourish. Go to sakara.com/lockedon20 or enter code lockedon20 for 20% off at checkout. Joining us now is Nick Angstedt from Locked On Mavs and Locked On NBA as the Dallas Mavericks absolutely embarrass the Phoenix Suns in Game 7 on the road in the Valley, 123-90. Nick, I mean, is this one of the most embarrassing playoff performances of all time? It has to be, right?
Oh, man.
I haven't seen something like this. I thought
a team missing like 20 straight threes was going to be one of the most embarrassing playoff things that have ever happened. But this Game 7 for the Suns, I mean, if you just look at it from the Suns' perspective, like, they had all the pressure on them coming into this game. I mean, Chris Paul's 38. I don't know how many more bites of the apple he's going to get out of this. Like, next year, teams in the West are only going to get better. Guys are going to only come back from injury next year. And this was their best shot for sure, because all the rest of these teams in the NBA playoffs look beatable. This is their best shot right now. And to come out the way that he did now after the game, by the way, Patrick Beverley tweeted during the game, just wait to see who's going to come out with some kind of BS injury during this terrible loss. And Chris Paul apparently has been dealing with a quad injury. But honestly, like, I kind of believe him because he's just been so bad the last five games. He just has not looked the same, has not looked right, has not looked like himself at all, not getting to his spots, not taking enough shots. Like, he's taking like 10 shots, five shots, seven shots in some of these games, not getting the assist numbers that we're used to seeing from him, just not even being an impact. And the Mavericks have attacked him over and over again, and he just worn him down in this series. Devin Booker also just not stepping up the way that they thought. DeAndre Ayton played 17 minutes in this game. He played 0 minutes in the fourth quarter, and which, by the way, the fourth quarter didn't matter anyway, so I don't know if that stat matters at all for this game. But when asked about it afterwards, Monty Williams was like, it's internal. The reason why he only played 17 minutes was internal. And I'm like, was it internal inside of him? Like, was it his heart, or was it his want to play? Was it his willingness to commit to what they were doing, or was it because of some kind of contract thing? But all that stuff comes together. The 64-win Suns team that was top three in offensive and defensive rating coming into this, just getting absolutely torched by this Mavericks team. Like, this Mavericks team with this roster, I didn't think it was going to happen like this, and no one thought it was going to happen like this.
Yeah, maybe it was the internal bleeding of just the Phoenix Suns organization, because that's exactly what was happening here. I mean, of the Suns' big three, Paul, Booker, and Ayton, not a single one of them hit a field goal until what was like just under six minutes to go in the second quarter.
4 minutes left in the it was 4 minutes left in the second quarter. Ayton made his first field goal. That was the first one by Booker, Chris Paul, or Ayton. 5 minutes left to go in the third quarter. That was Devin Booker's first field goal. Like, the Mavs defense gets some kind of credit from this, right? Like, they deserve to have their moment. Was like, yeah, they figured out something against this Suns team, because they, you know, they're in their wins, their defensive rating was between 90 and 106, and their losses, their defensive rating was between 100 and 20 and 140. Like the Mavericks just figured something out defensively against this team. They hadn't done it on the road yet in Phoenix, but in this game, they just it put it all together.
And this was a Mavericks team that for stretches of this NBA season was winning games with defense, which was quite surprising, you know, given the Mavs of old that we've come to, you know, expected them to be, you know, offensive juggernaut, maybe a bit questionable on defense at times. And yet they kind of flipped the script on their identity here in the playoffs on the biggest stage when the lights were brightest, when it mattered the most. And I think you have to give credit to Jason Kidd to get, you know, for getting these guys to buy in on that end of the basketball.
Yeah, it actually started back in January, and it started Porzingis was out for a little while. The Mavericks started to really go more switching heavy on their defense. They decided to go into it with, all right, we're going to start these two wings and Bullock and Dorian Finney-Smith. They're going to be part of our identity, and then we're going to play Maxey a ton, play him more than Dwight Powell, and that's going to be able to allow us to switch on defense and do more and be able to rotate and play this team defense we really want to play. And that's really when it changed. And then the Porzingis trade happens, and that's finalized. Like, hey, we're going in all in with another guard and then some a hybrid big in Davis Bertans, whatever you want to call him. But the Mavericks and Sean Sweeney should get a lot of credit. Mavericks assistant coach that has been with Jason Kidd since his Brooklyn days. He should get a ton of credit. He's been the guru behind the defense. He's been the one. If you see the short guy on the Mavs bench just screaming and yelling at people during defensive possessions, that's Sean Sweeney. And they've just done an incredible job. This whole coaching staff has done an incredible job taking this Mavericks team with essentially the same parts, right? You look at Luka, Brunson, Dorian Finney-Smith, Maxey, Dwight Powell. Like all these guys are the same. Bullock's new, Dinwiddie's new, but other than that, like it's the same kind of Mavericks team, and just completely flipping the script and turning their defense from a huge negative to a huge positive.
Nick, I lost track of the number of times, you know, scrolling through Twitter and just, you know, perusing the timeline while also watching this game, how many times I saw the words all-time, career, worst, best, because were so many records broken in this game. And so let's just roll through a few of these really quick before we focus on the man himself, Luka Doncic. And that's, first off, Chris Paul, plus minus minus 39, the worst in his entire NBA career, regular season or playoffs. CP3 has now blown five leads of 2-0 in the playoffs across his entire career. Luka's 27 points in the first half are the second most all time in the first half of a game seven. The only person he's trailing is himself in game seven the Clippers last year, where he had 29 points. And the Mavs' 30-point lead is the biggest halftime lead in any game seven all time. And a huge part of this is we're going to talk about the dynamic duo here in this game. Really, I mean, we can look at it as a trio, right? Yep. Jalen Brunson also stepped up, but Spencer Dinwiddie, when it mattered most for this Mavericks team, stepped up big in game six and stepped up in a huge way on the road in game seven. And this one had 30 points, 11 of 15 shooting. He was a big reason for that huge spark early in the game, right? To get the Mavs, you know, going so well so early. And Luka and Dinwiddie, another all-time one here. First pair of teammates in NBA history to both have 30 plus points and 5 plus made threes in a game seven.
Spencer Dinwiddie stepped up in exactly the right time. We had kind of like put him to bed, like, all right, he's not going to have a huge impact on the series. He had some production in the Jazz series, but wasn't very efficient. And in this game, just took all of that, like all the moments where the Mavs needed him to step up and was like, I'm just going to do it all here. I'm going to get it all done. The most procrastinating he could have ever done in NBA playoffs, where he's just like, I'm going to take all the production that I would have given in the Jazz and then the beginning first six games of the Sun series and put it all right here.
The guy in the group project who waits until the very end to contribute anything.
But then when he shows up, you're like, oh dang, where was that? I would have stepped up my game and my part of the project because of how good your stuff was when you actually showed up. Luka and Brunson and Dinwiddie, if you just look at like this, the sheer shot attempts, like just the straight shot attempts, took 19, 19, and 15 between Luka, Brunson, and Dinwiddie shots. They were just going to say, the Mavericks are just in this game going to say, we're going to go one-on-one against the best players on the Suns, and we're just going to beat them. We're just going to straight up beat them. At one point, I think at halftime, this team only had four assists. The Mavericks did. They were up by like 30, and they only had four assists. They finished the game with 14, with 46 made shots. Like, they were just going one-on-one against the Suns and saying, we're going to beat you. Dinwiddie did it. Brunson did it. Obviously, Luka did it. And that was the game plan, I guess, that they were going to go with and just say, hey, We believe that our guys are battle tested. They're ready. They've been through a lot. This Mavericks team has been playing, like, leaning forward in their seat for months at this point. I mean, they started the season 16-18. They had to work themselves out of that. They had to play with intention every single night to get out of that. They had to work themselves to get out of the seventh seed to avoid the play-in. They had to work themselves to get out of the five seed and get home court advantage. They had to work themselves when they were down 2-0 against this Suns team to not go down 3-0. They had to work in game six to not get eliminated. And this Suns team has not done that this season. The Suns team has, you know, for the majority of this season, has been the best team in the NBA. And they've not had moments where they've had to play guys 40 minutes, because if they don't, then their season is in jeopardy, right? And so that was a huge difference between these two teams. And none of these Suns players, except for Chris Paul, had been in a game seven, right? Like, these are some of these are young Suns players. They've been to the finals, but they've never been in a game seven situation where they needed to win or else they're going to go home. And Luka and Dorian and Brunson and Maxi, those guys have been in those moments. And Luka has been in huge moments in Europe before this NBA thing even started for him.
You know, I find it funny that you dropped in the term "we believe" a few sentences back, just because
the parallels.
Now, after coming out triumphant here in this game seven against the Phoenix Suns, which, to your point, right, it felt like maybe last year the Suns were playing with a bit of a chip on their shoulder, you know, didn't have that same drive maybe this time around after having made it to the finals, maybe a bit gassed from that previous trip there. Didn't quite have the same edge to them this year, at least not in the playoffs, it felt like, that they did last season, the straight buzzsaw that they were. But speaking of "we believe," the Dallas Mavericks are now headed to the Western Conference Finals. It's going to mark the first playoff tangle between the Golden State Warriors and Dallas Mavericks since the "We Believe" Warriors upset the 67-win Mavericks in the first round all the way back in 2007. Oof. Nick, of course, you're going to have us covered for all of that and more over at Locked On Mavs. Appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Always.
Coming up, just what went right for Jason Tatum and the Boston Celtics in Game 7 against the Milwaukee Bucks? How were they able to come out on top and win the series, advancing to the Eastern Conference Finals? But first, a quick message from our friends over at Sakara, because look, when you want to feel your best, feeling your best starts with what you eat. Sakara helps you live a healthy, balanced lifestyle and truly enjoy it with delicious, plant-rich, transformational nutrition that builds a foundation for living in your best body. Now is the time to seek wellness, joy, and abundance in all areas of your life, starting with what you eat. Sakara is a wellness company anchored in food as medicine, on a mission to nourish your body through the power of plants. Sakara gives you the tools that you need to transform your life with their organic, ready-to-eat meal delivery program and functional wellness essentials. Their nutritionally designed, chef-crafted breakfasts, lunches, and dinners are made with powerful plant-rich ingredients, helping boost your energy, support your digestion, curb your sugar cravings, and get your skin glowing. Plus, it's all delivered right to your doorstep, ready to eat. And right now, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off their very first order when they go to sakara.com/lockedon20 or enter code lockedon20 at checkout. That's Sakara, sakara.com/lockedon20 to get 20% off your very first order. Again, sakara.com/lockedon20. And continuing on here at Locked On NBA Monday, as always, appreciate you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. For your second listen, be sure to go check out the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast. Host Raphael Barlow from NBA Draft Junkies and author of the NBA Big Board newsletter is joined by Richard Stamen, Sam Ferris, and Leif Thulin, giving fans an in-depth look into the NBA draft, mock draft, player rankings, and of course, big boards. It's free and available wherever you get your podcasts. Joining us now is John Corrales from Locked On Celtics. You can follow on Twitter, the Bird app, at John_Corrales. John, the Celtics coming away with a huge Game 7 win against the reigning champion Milwaukee Bucks. Final score 109-81. A Boston three-party, if you will, shooting 40% from downtown, 22 of 55 overall. But let's backtrack to before it looked like the win was in hand. The Celtics started this game, and things didn't look great. 5 of 22 from the floor before they reeled off, what was it, 5, 6, 7 straight buckets in a row at the top of that second quarter. What did you see change early in that game?
Well, it actually kind of followed the same script that the series has been following. A lot of these games have started with Milwaukee punching first, and the Celtics have tended to come into the second quarter and start to play better in the second quarter. It's Milwaukee always seemed to start each half better and close. The close, aside from game five, was always like a little sketchy. And so I saw the Celtics just kind of like just keep going, sticking to the plan. And then the shots started to fall. I mean, really, it's as simple as that. The Celtics were as cold as you could be at the beginning, but they made things difficult on Giannis. Giannis missed some shots. Milwaukee missed a bunch of shots. And the Celtics, they started to fall. All of a sudden, that second quarter, you started to see, all right, here comes Grant. Grant is starting to pick it up. Jason Tatum is starting to pick it up. They just kind of kept that steady march that Ime has always talked about. Ime Udoka is just, you know, keep going with it, stick to the plan. It's going to work out. They did a good job attacking. Peyton Pritchard came in and gave them some good minutes in the second quarter. Just kind of changed the energy a little bit. And yeah, I think with the Celtics, we knew that Milwaukee was going to force them to take some three-pointers. Once they stayed comfortable, you know, and started to see a couple of those fall, we saw the result.
Now, a big part of Milwaukee's just whole defensive game plan was to force certain guys to take certain shots. And in this game, that guy was Grant Williams. They gave up 18 three-pointers to Grant Williams, who wound up hitting seven of them. A career night for Grant Williams, 27 points in this game. How important was it for Grant Williams? And you talk about the message from Ime Udoka, right? Just to keep taking those shots, right? To not go away from what they knew was going to work in the end.
Ime said after the game, I told him to let it fly. And you saw in the last couple of games where he took one three-pointer in the last game and two in the game prior to that, he had been struggling with his three-point shot. And what he had done is like up fake and drive. And yes, the Celtics were about, you want to go drive and kick and get that. But Grant is not exactly the guy that, not right now. Like, come back with that drive and kick game. He's done really well attacking closeouts, but against this Milwaukee defense, they want him shooting the three-pointers. So he said, all right, you want me to shoot the threes? Okay, I'll shoot the threes. And he ended up taking 18 of them, but that's what Milwaukee was daring him to do. And he's worked really, really hard to get that three-point shot kind of reliable. And he still has ebbs and flows to his three-point shooting kind of accuracy, but he stays confident because the team stays confident in him. So he really did a good job playing kind of more within himself and taking the shots that were there. And once a couple go down, you just start to feel that confidence. And it, I think, was contagious. Peyton Pritchard had a big three-pointer stretch in the third quarter. Other guys started to hit shots. And I think it all came off of what Grant Williams was doing.
Yeah, those Peyton Pritchard step back three-pointers hit a little bit different when you're up and when you're winning as opposed to when you're losing a game and you see Brad Stevens walking out of whatever suite he was watching the game in. But let's shift gears here. We talk about Jason Tatum a little bit, the guy who's at the epicenter of everything that the Boston Celtics are, you know, want to achieve, want to do. And in this game, he had a very solid performance, although a bit quieter maybe than Grant Williams, but 23 points, 7 of 14 shooting. He had the 6 rebounds, 8 assists, really strong overall night. But there was a very pivotal moment in this game, John, where Tatum picked up his fourth foul. They challenged it. They tried to get it, you know, overturned. Didn't happen. Had to sit down. And the Celtics responded in a big way, right? That could have been the moment where you saw this Celtics team cave without their star player on the floor for the majority of that third quarter, picking up its fourth foul with about 8 minutes left to go in the third frame, I believe. And then they responded in a really big way.
Yeah, I mean, that you saw the energy actually kind of pick up. It's like you could hear them say, all right, we know that we don't have our guy. So we need to really like play here. And you saw more ball movement there. The energy was there. And I think this is why the game seven at home was really important. And we know that the Bucks kind of sacrificed the game seven for, you know, in order to avoid Brooklyn. And that decision does kind of loom here, because in that situation in the third quarter, when Jason Tatum goes out, that would be a situation if this game was in Milwaukee and everything transpired the exact same way, the crowd would have been into it. They would have, that momentum would have gone Milwaukee's way. And you saw at the end of the game, Giannis was kind of slumped on the bench. And of course, he was disappointed, but I think he was also kind of gassed. He was missing a lot of shots there in the paint, and he just wasn't shooting well because I think he was really, really tired, and he's been tired in this. But if that moment, that Jason Tatum moment happens in Milwaukee and everything's kind of, the crowd is being angry, and all of a sudden you get that little bit of juice, maybe Giannis finishes a couple of those layups with some dunks and the dynamic changes, and that's where Milwaukee does go on a run. In Boston, the Celtics respond with a run. And you make a good play after that, and the crowd's behind you, and you get that little bit of energy. I can tell you, Jackson, both teams were just beat to hell at the end of this. Just beat to hell. And that little adrenaline boost from the crowd in that moment actually does make a difference. And I think that's where that came from. The Celtics said, okay, we got to dig down deep. We know we've got to make a play here. And when they did make a play, you get that juice from the crowd behind you, and all of a sudden you start to feel it. Like, yes, okay, come on, one more play. Let's get us to the end of the third quarter. And they did it. They just kept coming.
Every little competitive edge matters when you're in a game seven, do or die, you know, your winner take all scenario. And when you talk about what, you know, what happened there with Giannis maybe getting a little bit gassed there in that second half, just 8 points scored. Don't get it twisted. He finished the game 25 points, 20 rebounds, 9 assists, right? Almost an absurd triple double 2020 night. But that second half, just 8 points, 4 of 16 shooting. How much of both, obviously the Milwaukee Bucks, they had their 3-point shooting struggles, just 4 of 33 for 12% on the evening. How much of that played into the Celtics' ability to be a little bit more aggressive with defending Giannis and really just making life hell for him on the defensive side of the floor?
The Celtics have been trying to make his life hell all series long. And I think
easier said than done.
Right. Like, I think I was just having this conversation with somebody yesterday. Like, I think the Celtics have played good defense on Giannis, and he's scoring 44 points. You know, like, What do you do? Like, but what they, I think when it started to become obvious, like, he just didn't have enough. Look, the loss of Chris Middleton was just gigantic for them. To ask Giannis to go and create so much for himself, the Celtics just kind of knew that by the end of games and by the end of the series, like they said that today, Ime said it, you can see it started to, they started to grind him down a bit. And when you are able to be physical with him and they could anticipate when he was putting the ball on the floor and he turned the ball over a bunch and just nothing was comfortable for him. Nothing in this entire series, seven games, very little of it was comfortable for Giannis. He is the first player to ever have 200 points, 100 rebounds, and 50 assists in a playoff series. And I thought the Celtics did a damn good job defending him, which just goes to show how amazing he is. But what they really limited, and maybe the story of this game, aside from the Celtics' three-point shooting, and it's tied into the Milwaukee lack of three-point shooting, Giannis had 6 assists in that first quarter when they made their big run and got up 10 early. He had 3 assists the rest of the way. And I always said, if you could limit his assists in this series, then you're golden. It doesn't matter how much he scores because it's all about these other guys. Without Chris Middleton, it's all about these other guys. And you just didn't have anybody you could trust that, you know, on Milwaukee, like Holiday, all of those guys have moments and are capable, but to do it all the time, the Celtics banked on that. And that's part of their defensive strategy. And that's why it paid off.
The Celtics advance after clinching the win here in Game 7 against the Bucks and awaiting them. It doesn't get any easier. They've got the Miami Heat awaiting in the Eastern
Conference.
Here's final, the top. Right? Right, you get through the Brooklyn Nets, then you get through the Milwaukee Bucks, the reigning champs, and now here's the number one seed Miami Heat. Good luck. Have fun. But you're going to have us covered. You're going to have us covered for all of that and more, of course, over at Locked On Celtics. John, appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
You got it, Jackson. Anytime.
Coming up, just what went wrong for Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks in Game 7 against the Boston Celtics. But first, a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. Because when it comes to protein bars, you need to check out Built Bar. They're the number one protein bar on the market, and for good reason. It's basically a candy bar that's jam-packed with protein. Every bar is coated in 100% delicious chocolate. They're not gritty or chalky like other protein bars on the market. They've got so many incredible flavors to choose from. Raspberry, strawberry, mint brownie, cookies and cream, my personal favorite, coconut brownie. Brownie chunk. You really can't go wrong with a single bar on their menu. Every single bar is low cal, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. Amazing if you're on a keto diet. Amazing if you're trying to cut back a little bit, maybe lose a little bit of weight. You can check them out. Just go to built.com and use promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your very next order of the best tasting protein bars on the market. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. And final segment here at Locked On NBA Monday. As always, appreciate you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. Joining us now is Kane Pittman from Locked On Bucks. Bitter, bitter defeat despite 25 points, 20 rebounds, 9 assists from Giannis Antetokounmpo. The Milwaukee Bucks fall in Game 7 to the Boston Celtics, final score 109-81. Kane, at what point in this game could you really start to see the game kind of getting away from Giannis and company?
Honestly, in the first half, because the Bucks couldn't hit a three. And the problem, and this was a problem throughout the series, but we understand for Milwaukee, offense was a major problem throughout this series. Even in the games that they won, we kind of had Locked On Bucks. We were talking about it and we said, well, the Bucks won these games, but it doesn't feel like they're in control of the series, which sounds crazy when you've got a chance to close it out at home. But they were pushing it uphill all series long offensively. And tonight they finished 4-for-33. But at halftime, that was very problematic. So going down 5 points at the half felt like it was going to be a difficult one to overcome.
Despite, and you mentioned just the offensive struggles throughout the entire series, but, you know, Giannis seemed to kind of have it going here in this game early on. At least he had the 17 points at half. He had, I believe, 7 or 8 assists at half, but then the second half rolls around and that's when the kind of wheels really started to come off the train there a little bit. Giannis finished the game second half, just 8 points, 25% shooting from the floor, 4 of 16, had a pair of turnovers, didn't hit either of his threes in the second half. Was it more so Giannis's play that was, you know, struggling in the second half, or was it the fact that nobody could hit shots around him that allowed the Boston defense to really start to key in on him and make life difficult?
Yeah, probably a bit of everything. And also, obviously, we have to acknowledge the Boston defense as an elite defense as well. It did a fantastic job. He missed a couple of, he missed 4 layups in this game, which you don't typically see him miss. Why was that? Was that the toll of the series? Was that the fatigue? I'm not 100% sure. But ultimately, we saw at the start of this game, he had a brilliant first quarter. And it's like, okay, this is what the Bucks need to win this game. He was on pace, I think, for 50 points, 20 plus rebounds, 20 plus assists. And it was like, yeah, you might actually need to do that for the Bucks to win this game. Unfortunately, the shots stopped dropping for him. The 3-point shooting never came around. On the course of the series, or over the whole 7 games, the Bucks are outscored 327-171 beyond the 3-point line. You're not going to win many series, if any, and maybe it's a surprise that they even got to 7 with that differential.
Was this series, Kane, with no Chris Middleton, you know, and the level at which the Celtics are currently playing, was this the most difficult series the Bucks have gone through in the Giannis era? Now, I know this is a championship team, the one, you know, won the title last season. Despite all that, was this the most difficult series they've ever faced?
I don't think so. I would still say the series last year that they went through, probably with Brooklyn, and people will point to that and say, well, they had injuries, and I understand that. But we always said the whole way through that most of the time, if you look at who wins the championship, they've had some sort of good luck, not necessarily with injuries on the other team, but injuries on their own team. But for me, the mental part of the Bucks having to go through and win a championship last year after they had fallen short a couple of years in a row under Mike Budenholzer and with Giannis playing at MVP level. So I still think last year, getting over the hump, trailing 2-0 in the second round and the finals, both of those series were more difficult than this one. But unfortunately tonight, like we said, there is always a little bit of luck. And it's not for the Boston Celtics to care less that Chris Middleton didn't play in this series. They go through and they have a chance now to win the title. But for the Bucks, perhaps it was surprising that they were even able to stay in the series for this long.
what should be the main takeaway or the main lesson here for Giannis, for Coach Budenholzer, for the rest of the Bucks, you know, after wrapping up this series?
Well, I think they'll walk away, and they've said it in the post game as well. They'll walk away feeling like they gave it all physically. I don't think there was ever a lack of effort. I don't think that they weren't engaged defensively. I thought they had a pretty good defensive series. Tonight, Boston shot 23s, but they still only scored 109 points, and they're on pace for around 100 pre-garbage time. So defensively, again, it was a pretty decent performance. They defended well. They need better shooting. This has been a problem for the Bucks for years and years and years, that they could just do not shoot the ball well in the postseason. Why is that? I'm not 100% sure, but it's been a repeat every year, and it ultimately cost them in this series.
Do you think there maybe is going to be a referendum either with the fans or just, you know, pointing fingers at, you know, maybe the scheme, the game plan, when you look at how the Boston Celtics were able to, you know, get so many wide open threes, the game plan to just give Grant Williams all the three pointers in the world in this game? Do you think that is maybe part of the issue, or more so just the issue that, you know, the Bucks just couldn't hit any shots on the offensive end? Was there an issue with the defensive game plan overall, or do you think it was, you know, competent across these seven games?
Yeah, I mean, you're always going to get it, and fans, let's be honest, Mark Budenholzer is someone that's always been, you know, in the gun with Bucks fans, and they'll say, well, fire Bud, and they're saying it after this game. To me, it's absolutely absurd. Yeah, Grant Williams had a great game. He had a great game seven, and you have to tip your hat to him. But ultimately, I think if you came into the game and said Grant Williams is going to attempt 18, 19 threes or whatever he did, you say, okay, fine. If you're going to lose a game because Grant Williams hits seven or eight threes, then you just say, fine, that's cool. The Bucks still held them to a very, very reasonable total, and in the end, they scored 81 points. So it's very hard for me to wrap my head around how anyone could point to the defense and say you lost the game because of the defense in this series. I thought the defense was great.
So, Kane, is this the kind of loss where if you're the Milwaukee Bucks, do you just brush it off and you basically say, you know what, we didn't have Middleton. We know we're a championship caliber organization. We still got all of our mainstay pieces. Or is this, and you know, basically with the intent of running it back again next season, or is this, you know, something where you maybe dig a little bit deeper, look into it and say, no, there are some issues here. You know, if the offense falls apart without Middleton on the floor, what do we need to change?
Well, I mean, to me, if they come back next year and they don't have Middleton in the postseason again, then they're not going to win a title again. I mean, we spoke about it through the season and we said, if they can't get Brook Lopez back, I don't think the Bucks can win the title. They got him back, then they lose Chris Middleton. If you lose any one of those key players, I just don't think the Bucks are going to win a title. So I think what they need to look at, again, is the shooting in the postseason. Why does it continually fail? And they need to probably look at the starting lineup and say, well, Grayson Allen was disastrous in this series against Boston. You can't go into another season and rely on him as a guy that you think is going to contribute in the postseason, because he was one of the rare weak links defensively. I don't think he was awful, but he was one of the rare weak links, and he gave you absolutely zero on the offensive end. So I think it'll be more with the role players. Everyone wants wings that can shoot, obviously. That's what every single team in the league wants, but the Bucks have to choose the right ones and hope that they can attract some of those guys here, because they are working within tight margins just with the salary structure of their top players.
How do the Bucks approach this offseason with their chances to repeat as champions cut just a little bit short? You're going to have us covered for all of that and more over at Locked On Bucks. Kane, appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Anytime.
And that's going to do it for another Monday edition of Locked On NBA. As always, thank you so much for checking out the show. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcasts: Apple, Spotify, Google, the Odyssey app, free and available on all platforms. Also, be sure to check out the show on YouTube. Just go to YouTube, search Locked On NBA, like, comment, subscribe, all of that. But as always, thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On NBA Monday. Biggest stories with the local experts.